Blog Talk Radio.
Can you do it? I'd like to think because it's fun. Odds? Come on in. The door is open to Eerie House Radio. As Pod Bean says, why do we always come here? I guess we'll never know. It's like torture. Absolutely, that's what we're here, is to twist and turn and give you suspense, some silly comedy, and great radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Fonzie Bear, Waka Waka. Dave from the Weirdest Really Bad Movie. And we still got the... Well, I'd say somebody gives it away too much. We're still digging some bodies up tonight and moving them around. Like a game of chess, right?
Yep. And you lose. No, because you're stuck with us. No. We got CBS Radio Mystery Theater tonight. Always a Saturday favorite for me. I hope for you too.
Yeah, it was just a wonderful way to cap off your weekend and... a wonderful gothic tale once again tonight from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And looking forward to sharing this one, and as we do so many of these. It was funny, my wife asked for my Twilight Zone collection, so she's down there watching all these Twilight Zone, they binge watching Twilight Zone, and I hear all this great music that we'll be hearing tonight.
Good stuff, Dave. If you're going to binge watch, Twilight Zone is not a bad pick. Neither is the old Outer Limits from the 60s as well.
Actually, I've got Outer Limits up here on my TV, so.
No collection is complete without them. Want to welcome the SI Paper and Mrs., as well as Fogsbane, to the chat. And those of you listening, we can't see. We don't know you're there, but we appreciate you as we bring you CBS Radio Mystery Theater. This one tonight's called The Headstrong Corpse. Now, yesterday, pretty much the stories were very similar to the Robert Louis Stevenson story. A little Burke and Hare, a little bit of grave robbing for the medical industry. Highly recommend The Body Snatcher from 1945 with Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi. And Karloff is absolutely at his best in this film. Absolutely at his best under Val Lewton's direction and his own great skills. Good stuff. Must see.
And I have a few more tales to share tonight, Dale. Of real life body snatchings that two of them are from our time, one of them is not. I thought I might share that one because some of the names are a little familiar here. Here's a question that came up. Did Errol Flynn steal John Barrymore's corpse from the morgue?
What?
Reportedly, Errol Flynn snatched John Barrymore's corpse from the morgue and took it to his late pal out of some morbid afterlife carousing. Here's how the story actually came down. According to the swashbuckler's memoirs, My Wicked, Wicked Ways, the two-fisted director, Raoul Walsh, borrowed Barrymore's stone-cold body from the mortuary when the master thespian died May 29, 1942. But back then, in the golden era of Hollywood, Barrymore, Flynn, and others of the Bundy Drive gang made the later day Rat Pack seem like Cub Scouts when it came to excessive boozing, whoring, and carousing. It's to no one's surprise when Flynn learned that his mentor and longtime drinking buddy Barrymore had died suddenly. He went on an out-of-control bender with Raoul Walsh to drown out their sorrows at the Cock and Bull Bar. While Flynn was still knocking them back, Walsh excused himself and mysteriously disappeared. Walsh paid a visit to the Pierce Brothers Mortuary, where the great profile lay in state. he bribed the parlor director and retrieved the dearly departed and drove him back to Flynn's mansion. Walsh recalled awakening Flynn's Russian butler out of his drunken stupor to help bring the stiff inside the house. Mr. Barrymore's drunk, so lend me a hand, Walsh recalled in an interview with the Beaver Times. I think he's dead, the butler countered. You've seen him like this before, Walsh insisted, so help, lend me a hand. All right, but he looks dead to me. So, after a longer discussion, Walsh and the butler dragged Barrymore's body inside, placing the stone-cold star into his favorite perch on Flynn's couch. He then implored the butler to get his woozy pal some coffee to help sober him up. A passed-out Barrymore on the couch was nothing new to the seen-it-all, drunk-it-all, rusky butler. About 4 a.m., after draining bottles dry at the Cock and Bull, Flynn staggered back home. Walsh recalled, at first, Flynn noticed nothing unusual. He sat down in his favorite chair, was talking about something or other, when the butler came back in saying, here's Mr. Barrymore's coffee. And with that, Flynn saw Jack and ran out of the house screaming. He hid behind the bush in the yard yelling, get him out of here! Are you trying to get us all put in San Quentin? Well, I took Jack back to the funeral home, and the mortician asked me where I'd taken him. Walsh recalled, he said, I went to Errol Flynn's house. You did? He said. Why, if I had known you were taking him up there, I would have put a better suit on him. Yet Barrymore's official biographer, John Colbert, claimed that there's only one visitor to Barrymore at the mortuary, a local well-known prostitute, who knelt and prayed and continued on her way in silence. Regardless, Raoul Walsh went on record again recalling he and Flynn's story for the 1973 documentary, The Men Who Made Movies. But for Errol, the passing of his longtime pal, John Barrymore, was more than losing a booze buddy. He had practically worshipped the great actor. In fact, so much so, Flynn later played an aging Barrymore battling his booze estranged daughter, Diana, which was Dorothy Malone, in a biopic appropriately called Too Much Too Soon. The title would, which could have been easily Flynn's epitaph, as well as he died at the age of 50 within a year of the film's release. So, wow. Did they really steal John Barrymore's body from the mortuary or not? Maybe we'll never know, but it makes a heck of a story.
That it does. Oh, my God. They do indeed make the rat pack look like Cub Scouts. But
that takes work. That takes work.
That it does. the good old days. CBS Radio Mystery Theater, this one, The Headstrong Corpse will be our story tonight. Do we have?
We have a wonderful cast again
on this episode.
What's that?
Do we have any info on this episode?
Oh, well, we do. We do. I think we've got a wonderful cast with Court Benson, Golden Gouldie, and Martin. Even the author George Lothar is in on some acting somewhere along the line. The episode itself comes to us from August 6th, 1974. It is episode number 128.
And now, Mystery Theater, brought to you in part by True Value Hardware, your store of first choice.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the wonders of your own imagination. For although I am about to tell you a horror story, it is really your imagination that will bring it to life for you. I shouldn't even say I will tell it, for it's really the story of Edward Somerset, as recounted in his private journal dated London, 1874. A truly harrowing account of what took place at Moorland Manor. Our mystery drama, The Headstrong Corpse, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther and stars Suzanne Grossman and Gordon Gould. As you may know, it's a custom of mine, a hobby, if you will, to read old diaries and journals, the accounts of lives written down by people long since dead and in their graves. Recently, I had the good fortune to come across the journal of a certain Edward Somerset, a young London lawyer, barrister, the English would say, who tells a grisly tale of what took place at Moorland Manor in the year 1874. According to Edward Somerset, let him tell the story in his own words, just as he recorded it in his journal.
And so, this being the appointed day, I took the coach to the village of Burley, 20 miles south of London in Kent, and in spite of the storminess of the weather, made the trip in less than 4 hours. I found Margaret Tresilian, the girl I loved devotedly, but who, alas, shall never be mine, in a terrible state of nerves.
Edward, how glad I am to see you.
And I you, my darling, though I feared you'd not welcome the sight of me.
Oh, darling, if only I'd never consented to marry Richard Westmore, never given my promise.
You had no choice.
Is there no escape, no way out?
Only if Dr. Westmore releases you from your promise. Rescinds the marriage contract you and your father signed.
He'll never release me. In fact, he's coming for the weekend. He'll be here this evening to set the date for our marriage.
Perhaps if I were to have a talk with him... Now, what's all that?
Hobbs and Mrs. Murchison having another of their quarrels.
Mr. Hobbs, is that...
Oh, no, it isn't, Mrs. Murchison, by no means.
Oh, we'll see, Mr. Hobbs, we'll see. Miss...
What is it now, Mrs. Murchison? Since we buried my father a week ago, you and Hobbs have quarreled without let-up. What is it this time?
It's him and his lofty heirs, that's what it is. Sir Simon was hardly cold in his coffin before Hobbs began lording it over me and the other servants. Now your father is dead, he seems to feel he's in charge.
I am. That's the way Sir Simon would have wanted it. Oh, begging your pardon, miss, but as you know, I was butler and personal servant to your father before you were born. I've been with this family many years, most of my life, in fact.
Whatever this disagreement between you and Mrs. Murchison may be, we'll discuss it another time. At the moment, we must go to the crypt. Fetch a lantern so you can light the way. Well, why do you stand there?
Oh, there'll be no need for me to enter the crypt, I trust.
I don't believe so. Edward?
No. The will merely states that the coffin was to be left open for a week and food and water left nearby.
The master was always afraid of being buried alive. Deathly afraid.
As many are. It's an all too common occurrence. But no, you needn't enter the crypt, Hobbs. Miss Tresilian must do that. And I, as a representative of the law firm of Costain and Loring, must accompany her.
Ah, yes, sir, but when it comes to putting the lid on the coffin and screwing it down...
I'll do that. Since it seems to trouble you.
Oh, thank you, sir, and I'll fetch the lantern.
You may go, Mrs. Murchison. We'll discuss this matter later.
Very well, miss. But Hobbs is becoming... He has become impossible. Oh, now, who could that be on such a day as this?
Whoever it may be, let him in out of the storm, Mrs. Murchison.
Yes, miss, at once.
Oh, thank you, Murchison. Thank you. Frightful day. Soaked to the skin.
Lord Burley, what brings you out on such a day?
Well, all days are good days for business, my dear.
Business? Oh, I apologize. I haven't introduced you. This is Mr. Edward Somerset of Coston and Loring, my father's solicitors.
How do?
Edward, Lord Burleigh.
How do you do, sir?
You're here on business, you said?
To be exact, we make another offer for Moorland Manor, my dear.
You've chosen a bad time, my lord. Though, really, any time would be bad. As my father told you more than once, I think, Moorland is not for sale.
Wrong tense, my dear. It wasn't for sale, but it is now. Or I happen to know soon will be.
What gives you that idea, Lord Burleigh?
Excuse me, Miss...
Hobbs has brought the lantern, Edward. Lord Burleigh will have to excuse us.
Ah, I had forgot. This is the day, and no doubt the time, for paying a visit to the family crypt, eh? Your father had a fear of being buried alive. Well, I'm sure you'll find him dead enough.
May I ask how you happen to be so well acquainted with the private affairs of Moorland Manor? How do you know this is the day we were to visit the crypt?
There's little goes on in Burleigh, in the county and at the village, sir, that I don't know. Good day to you, sir. And you'll be hearing from me again, Miss Tressilian.
Terrible man.
Oh, certainly is. Well, Margaret, it's time.
Yes.
Hobbs, lead the way. Here we are. I'll open the door. Give me the lantern, Hobbs, and wait here.
Oh, yes, sir.
Come, Margaret.
Edward, I can't enter that awful place again.
I'm afraid you must. It was your father's wish.
So cold. Damp, so...
Oh. There. There's the open coffin. Let me just shine the lantern inside it to be sure your father's body is still there. Yes, it is. Look, Margaret.
Yes. The body is there.
Go outside now. I'll put the lid on the coffin and screw it down.
All right. I'll wait for you with Hobbs until you... Edward.
What is it?
There's something strange here. Something curious. The clothes on the body.
The clothes?
That isn't the suit we buried my father in. In fact, Edward... Oh, good Lord. It isn't my father's body.
Now.
Edward, I tell you, it isn't. You knew my father. He was much taller, and he was thin.
By heaven, you're right. But this makes no sense at all. It's his head.
Yes, it is. I'm going to faint.
Outside, quickly. I'll join you.
Miss, what is it, miss?
Something horrible. Horrible.
Oh, what, Miss Ward?
I don't dare say it, Hobbs. I don't dare think it.
Mr. Somerset, sir, what is it? What is it in there?
The thing in the coffin. It's Sir Simon's head, but not his body.
Not his body?
Someone cut his head off, stole his body, and put another in its place.
Incredible. Utterly incredible, Somerset.
Dr. Westmore, what I've just told you, I saw with my own eyes. So did Margaret. In fact, she was the one who first noticed it was the wrong body.
Where is she?
Resting. Or perhaps I should say recuperating. It was an awful shock for her.
Oh, no doubt. Have you notified the police?
No.
Well, why not, ma'am?
There's only a constable in the village, and I've heard he's anything but competent. I intend to send a message to the London police by coach tomorrow morning.
Well, better still, I'll take it for you.
I'd rather not wait till you leave on Monday.
Oh, I'll not be staying the weekend now. Margaret will be in no mood or condition to discuss our wedding plans. And as a surgeon at London Hospital, I have much to do. No point wasting my time here.
You don't exactly sound like a man in love, Dr. Westmore.
In love?
With Margaret, of course.
But I'm not. nor is she with me. It's all purely a financial arrangement, you understand?
Well, no, I didn't quite.
Oh, but of course. An arrangement I made with Sir Simon. He was a very ill man for nearly a decade. He sought my rather special services, if I may say so. But as you know, Morland is mortgaged to the hilt, and he was unable to pay.
In return, he offered you his daughter's hand in marriage?
And Morland Manor. Even though the estate is heavily mortgaged, it'll give me a tidy sum. A fortune, in fact, once I sell it. Now, look here, let's go down to the crypt. I want to see for myself.
I'll ring for Hobbs first. You say you're not in love with Margaret?
Not in the least.
I am.
No. Are you indeed?
And she's in love with me.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know quite how to ask this, except to ask it. Will you release Margaret?
Why, of course not.
Even if... Oh, Hobbs.
You rang, sir?
Yes. Dr. Westmore and I want to go down into the crypt. Bring a lantern, will you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and tell Mrs. Murchison she can serve tea in half an hour.
Yes, sir.
As I was saying, Doctor, even if Margaret signed over all right to Morland, to you...
Why should I bargain for what will be mine once we marry?
And if she refuses to marry you?
Well, she won't. Margaret is a woman of honor.
What do you know of honor, Dr. Westmore?
Now, if you mean to insult me, Somerset...
I mean to give you the truth. I've had you investigated, Doctor, quietly but thoroughly. I happen to know that you have twice been brought before the Royal College of Surgeons on charges of conduct unbecoming a physician. Charges which could not be proved for lack of evidence.
I was not guilty.
That you are presently under investigation by the same College of Surgeons who this time do have the evidence to revoke your license. And will, Dr. Westmore, because you are considered unworthy of the name doctor and will be barred from medical practice.
You have been thorough, Somerset. Perhaps, under the circumstances, you'd prefer I went down the crypt without your company.
I'd better go with you, since one of the charges against you is that of body snatching. I'll take the lantern, Hobbs. You wait here.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Oh, and you told Mrs. Murchison about tea.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but I couldn't find her about.
What do you mean? She must be somewhere in the house.
No, sir. At least I was unable to find her, and you did want the lantern right away, sir.
No matter. This way, Westmore.
Those coffins stacked one on top of another. Their occupants have certainly been dead for years.
Some of them for nearly a century.
Curious. That's Sir Simon's coffin there, the one with the lid off?
Yes. And as you can see, the body isn't that of Sir Simon, but...
Good Lord!
What in the name of... Here, raise the lantern. Let's have some more light. You did say the head was Sir Simon's?
It was.
But this is... It's the head of a woman.
Katie.
Katie?
Katie Johnson, the maid.
Well, it's incredible. First, if I'm to believe you, Sir Simon's body was exchanged for another, and now his head? Is this some sort of a joke?
I don't think so, Westmore. But if it is, it's the joke of someone gone mad. Stark mad.
A baffling mystery, wouldn't you say? You might even call it heady. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Edward Somerset's Daily Journal, recording what took place later on, is even more baffling. And I'm afraid, more ghastly. Most of this strange story, the body of it... There I go again. All I meant to say was, there's more to come. And so, I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
And more punishment.
Hey, you know, Dale, with all these wonderful mystery theaters that we've played. Have we ever really talked about E.G. Marshall?
A little bit. In fact, somewhere out there on YouTube, there's an episode of him filming a radio show with the actors. Remember that, Dave?
Yeah, yeah. If you go to the old-time radio enthusiast group, old radio show lovers, it's right up there at the top of their listing. E.G. Marshall actually never said what his name E.G. stood for. It was E period G period. He actually legally had his name, first name changed to E.G. for E.G. Marshall. I guess it would be a little easier to figure out if you knew what his birth name was. His name is Everett Eugene Grunz. I kind of make some E.G. in there. Guy who's made over 150 appearances between television and radio, and quite an interesting chap with the array of awards. You don't necessarily think of him as being in a lot of movies, which he played plenty of roles, but he did have an amazing role along with an amazing cast. He was juror number four in the Henry Fonda version of 12 Angry Men, along with Ed Begley and Henry Fonda, so many other great actors. I think Jack Klugman was in that as well. Yeah. It's a tremendous story, and it's even a more amazing cast than that. And with all the movies and roles that he did, it's amazing because what he may be remembered for longer than anything else may be as being host of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
He does such a great job. He sounds a lot like the classic radio horror show hosts.
Yep. He hosted it from 1974 to 81, and he actually starred in one episode. We haven't aired it yet. Maybe we should this Christmas. He starred in their version of The Christmas Carol as Ebenezer Scrooge. So it could be we need to put that on our docket for Christmas time this year, Dale.
That's a good idea.
But such a tremendous presence. And you know what? I think you could tell. You know, that when actors do their job, they do their job. You know, and if you can't tell what they're doing, then that's how you know. But he really seems to revel in this sometimes, as he's doing his lines here, much like. Not quite as, because there isn't as much mirth in here as there was, but much like Vincent Price did in The Saint, you can tell that Vincent Price was having a good time when he did The Saint.
Absolutely. I think he enjoyed most of what he did, but particularly playing that character, Simon Templar.
Yes. But, so it was... I had thought that he passed away not long after that, but he lived on until 1998. He died in New Bedford, New York, of lung cancer. But when he left the program, the Mystery Theater, he had been ailing and was having a hard time doing his duties, at least at that particular time. But he actually went on to do several other roles after that. Actually, it was 81 he left. Well, he was in 13 episodes of Chicago Hope. He was in several movies, Absolute Power. He was in Nixon with John Mitchell. He was in a TV movie, The Defenders, a TV movie, Miss Evers Boys, TV movie, The Defenders, and... a miniseries in 94, and his last appearance was in 1998, which was that was the year he passed. So he went on to go on and do many things after he left the Mystery Theater.
pretty cool. Dude kept himself busy. It seems like the great ones did. It wasn't work to them, so why retire?
Absolutely. And he always had a way of making it look so many times so effortless. And it isn't. It isn't. I mean, I've worked with people who are and have been professional actors, and it is a heck of a lot of work. Yet they make it look so stinking easy. But that's what they do. That's their craft. That's their job. And it just isn't a job. It's something else.
Yep, and we're going to get to hear a few more people doing their jobs for us in this chilling tale, Dave. You picked us a great one, this headstrong corpse. Here's part two. We'll be back after this.
The world is filled with all sorts of shocking things. But I must confess that even I, somewhat of a connoisseur of the shocking, was totally stunned by Edward Somerset's account of what happened following the gruesome discovery that Sir Simon's head had now been replaced by Katie Johnson's. If I was appalled merely in reading about what had taken place, the feelings of those who actually lived through these ghastly events can be imagined.
But where is my father's body, head and body? Whose body is it in the coffin? Who killed Katie Johnson, severed her head from her body, and put it in my father's coffin? What?
Margaret, I beg you, enough. I can't answer even one of your questions, let alone a dozen.
I didn't ask a dozen, Edward.
You needn't snap my head off.
No. We're all somewhat nerved up.
Talk. We sit here talking when we should be doing something.
Perhaps you have a suggestion, my dear Margaret?
At least one murder has been committed in this house. Possibly two. Katie Johnson and whoever's body that is in my father's coffin. Shouldn't we notify the police?
The village constable is worse than useless. Dr. Westmore has offered to take a message to the London police when he leaves in the morning.
You'll not be staying the weekend.
I may soon cease to be a doctor, Margaret. Certainly if the College of Surgeons rescinds my license. But I still retain some remnants of the gentleman. You are certainly in no mood to discuss our wedding plans.
Neither now nor at any other time.
Ah, well, you have no choice there.
Perhaps she does. Or could have, if, as you say, you do retain some gentlemanly qualities.
You refer to the suggestion you made earlier, just before we went down into the crypt.
Yes.
What suggestion?
That Westmore release you from your pledge to marry him in return for Moorland Manor, which, after all, is really what he wants.
Not quite, my dear fellow. Not altogether quite.
What do you mean? If you don't love Margaret...
Love has nothing to do with it. It's a matter of convenience and what is best for me.
I don't understand.
Well, you would if you'd allow me to finish. Once my license to practice medicine is revoked, and it will be this time, I'm sure, I shall go into business. Contacts, important contacts, are vital to business success. And the making of contacts requires a good deal of entertaining. So you see, I shall need a wife to fill the role of hostess. Does that answer you?
Yes, I guess it does.
I beg your pardon, Miss Margaret.
Oh, Hobbs, yes.
You asked me to find out where Mrs. Murchison had got to, and I have, Miss.
Where did you find her?
In the kitchen, sir, where she claimed she'd been all the time. Only she hasn't.
Did you tell her I want to see her?
Yes, Miss, he did. And I came straight along.
Where have you been the past hour?
In the kitchen, Miss. Preparing tonight's dinner.
Mrs. Murchison, more than an hour ago, I asked Hobbs to let you know he wanted tea, and he couldn't find you.
Well, I don't know why not, Mr. Somerset. I've been in the kitchen all that time. And as for tea, there was no need to give me an order. Tea is always served in this house at 5.
Then why didn't you serve it?
Too busy getting dinner, Miss. I gave Katie instructions to serve it today. She never got to do it. God rest her soul.
Hobbs said he couldn't find you. Not anywhere.
Well, that is a lie. I have been in that kitchen the last 2 hours. Never left it once. He's lying, he is.
trying to get me into trouble.
Oh, come now, Murchison. Why would Hobbs want to get you into trouble?
Because I know too much about him. That's why. And he's afraid I might tell what I know. He wants to see me dismissed.
The woman is mad. Stark mad.
Am I? We have been paid no salary in this house for 6 months. Now, not that I'm complaining, Miss. I'm not. But ask him how he can afford to buy the finest of vintage wines to swill down his gullet. Ask him who pays for the costly cigars he smokes. And ask him where he gets the money for the expensive suits, shoes, whatever he wears when he goes to London on his days off. Ask him.
Is it true, Hobbs?
Why, yes, miss. I'll not deny that I enjoy good wine and a fine cigar. How do I pay for them? Why, miss, your father paid me well in the many years I served him. I was able to save considerable. And that, miss, is all there is to it. Though Mrs. Murchison would like you to think otherwise.
Think what? Well, Mrs. Murchison?
Nothing, miss. I've said too much already. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a roast cooking.
1 minute.
Sir?
The inside of your right arm. I just noticed when you turned. It's smeared with what looks like blood.
Blood?
Well, look at it.
Oh. Oh, yes. Is it blood, Mrs. Murchison?
I guess it is. Yes, preparing the roast, cutting it, I must have got a smear of blood on me.
Is that how you got it, Mrs. Murchison?
What do you mean, Dr. Westmore?
Nothing. Nothing, Mrs. Murchison.
May I go, miss?
Yes. And you too, Hobbs.
Oh, yes, miss.
Well, she could have got that blood on her from cutting a roast of beef.
Or from cutting something else. My suspicions of Mrs. Murchison were sharply aroused. I had myself stated to Westmore that whoever was responsible for these ghoulish happenings must be mad, stark mad. I was speculating on all this in the drawing room after dinner, paying little attention to something Margaret and Westmore were discussing, when, to the surprise of us all, Lord Burleigh was announced for the second time that day.
His lordship, miss.
Good evening, Mr. Zillion, Mr. Somerset, and you, Dr. Westmore.
Good evening.
Lord Burleigh.
Sir?
I thought our business had ended this afternoon.
Ah, no, my dear. Business, sound business, that is, never takes no for an answer. Since I could not reason with you, I decided to ride over and, if possible, reason with your husband-to-be. To answer your look, Doctor, yes, I heard you were here.
Is there anything you don't know, Lord Burleigh?
Very little, very little. As your betrothed may have mentioned to you, I'm interested in buying Moorland Manor.
She didn't mention it, no.
Ah, yes. Well, I am prepared to make you, all things considered, a quite decent offer, Doctor, once you come into possession through marriage, of course. Would you be interested?
I would, indeed. Why do you want Moorland, my lord?
Well, it adjoins my own estate. The 780 acres of moorland would be a welcome addition.
I should think so, yes. What are you prepared to offer?
£1 per acre, £780.
That isn't an offer, Lord Burleigh. It's an insult.
Not at all. If you look at it in the right light, Doctor, all things considered, as I said, it's really something of a compliment.
As attorney for the estate, I can assure you it's worth a very great deal more than £780.
Oh, can you, Mr. Somerset? Can you indeed? In your position, you must also be aware that the estate is impoverished.
Yes, but
Taxes are now a year in arrears.
Yes, still...
I know. You entertained the hope, the forlorn hope, Mr. Somerset, that through proper management, through improved land production, you might salvage the estate.
I would hope that Dr. Westmore would, when he becomes owner.
Well, hasn't he told you he means to sell moorland within a month, perhaps less? You'd be willing to settle for shillings.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, quite simply, my dear, that there will be no one here to run the place for you. No servants, no farmers, no stable help, no one.
Why not?
Because of the strange things taking place here. I refer to the occurrences in the family vault. Are already known in the village, and the people are frightened. Within a few days, they will shun Moorland Manor as if it contained bubonic plague.
But this is impossible. Well informed as you may be on what goes on in Burley, you couldn't be this informed. Unless...
Yes?
Nothing.
No, I insist. Unless what, my dear?
I said nothing.
But your silence signifies everything. If you're implying that I have a more than ordinary knowledge of what is going on here, that I am in some way involved, then out with it.
That is indeed what I do surmise.
Well, then let me assure you that you are wrong. I have my sources of information, yes. I have my informants, indeed a network of them. But I am not, I repeat, not a body snatcher.
Body snatcher?
Oh, good Lord, man, what do you think is behind all this?
Body snatching.
Oh, heaven help us, what naivete. Do you think someone is simply playing games, having some sort of ghoulish fun? You, Miss Tressilian, and you, Mr. Somerset, yes, I can understand it with you two. But Westmore, you? Do you mean to say you haven't suggested this possibility, this probability, to these two young people?
Should I have?
Ah, but you know better than anyone the need of bodies for dissection purposes, for the training of medical students. Medical schools will pay £10 for a fresh body, and 15, as you damn well know, sir, for a fresh head.
Really? You're far more knowledgeable than I am, sir.
Oh, you know nothing of it, eh? You, whose case is on trial this very moment before the College of Surgeons for just such practices, you know nothing?
What is he on trial for? I thought it was body snatching alone.
Oh, that, of course. But in the eyes of the authorities, something far more vile. Dr. Westmore is a grave robber.
What?
Yes, my dear. He not only snatches corpses, but robs them as well.
Is this true?
I own to nothing.
You needn't. Your face says all.
Blast you, Lord Burley. For what you've done to me these past minutes.
I? To you? Have you not done it to yourself, sir?
Yes. Heaven above help me, yes. But I had hopes. Stupidly had hopes that I might repair the damage I've done others and myself. I dared to hope that with the monies I would receive from the sale of Moorland, I might regain some reputation, some respect, some personal dignity.
I ask your pardon. I had not known you. You had in you even a spark of decency.
Only a spark. Nevertheless, a spark, which I might have fanned into flame.
And you may still. What I have said has been said within the confines of this house.
No, Lord Burley, it has been said within the confines of this woman's heart. And will echo there till the day she dies.
Oh, well, I am sorry. But now, as to my offer to buy Moorland Manor...
Another time. We'll discuss it another time, if at all.
Now, then I had best take my leave.
That would be best. And Lord Burley...
My dear?
Don't come back.
The revelation of another side to Dr. Westmore's character, a good side, came as a surprise to both myself and Margaret. Unhappily, this better side of Dr. Westmore, as Margaret and I discovered in a long discussion with him following Burley's departure, by no means influenced him in releasing Margaret from her obligation to marry him. When finally he had retired for the night, Margaret and I sat hopelessly talking of the future.
Edward, I love you so. And the thought of marrying Dr. Westmore, I shudder at it.
I do, my darling. There must be something. Something.
What? What solution have you thought of?
One that only God could arrange, I'm afraid. Westmore's death.
Oh, Edward.
Frankly, there have been times when I've been nearly driven to arrange it myself.
You mustn't say such things, Edward. Not even think them. 2 in the morning. No wonder we're having such wild thoughts. We're tired. I'll say goodnight to you, my dearest.
Edward!
What in heaven's name?
Mrs. Murchison!
But where is she? Where are those screams? Oh, the crypt!
The crypt?
Sounds that way. Stay here.
No, I'm coming with you.
Here's the crypt. Don't come in, Margaret.
Nonsense, Edward.
What is it, Mrs. Murchison? What are you doing here in the crypt? What's happened to make you lose control?
There. It's Sir Simon's corpse. Go and look. See for yourself.
Good Lord.
Edward, what?
No, don't look, Margaret.
But I must. Oh, my God.
When I came to that part of Edward Somerset's journal, I could hardly wait to turn the page to find out what new horror had taken place in the crypt. And a horror it was, a shocking horror, as you'll discover when you turn the page, so to speak, shortly, after I return with Act Three.
Oh, Mark, what a wonderful tale we have going on here. Yes, indeed. What is indeed in that crypt?
I don't know, but it's giving me the willies.
So many wonderful tales from Mystery Theater. And
drill.
This is just another one of those wonderful tales. Just, I hadn't really listened to a lot of the Gothic ones, and I kind of picked up on this one more recently as I go back through many of the different shows and replay them after going through them all. At one point, I was at work where I could listen to at least one Mystery Theater every day, and went through the entire collection. And then started going back through it again. It's just such a wonderful way to go. Listen to them in the evening sometimes, and so these all so many of these programs. They're just so much fun.
Don't you hate it when you hear the screams from the crypt at night? Says GGSI paper or Mrs. No, actually, it's like a lullaby for me.
That's because you live in Erie House. You live in Erie House, huh?
Yeah, hoping those screams are the annoying neighbors. Oh, well, that's the end of that.
Well, we've had our share of annoying neighbors. You can't really wish it on them. That's not really fair. Not really fair.
That'll teach him for walking on my lawn. God.
Boy, you're quite the disciplinarian.
You have all. It's all about the corpses today and body snatching. What's going on? Who's got the body? Where is it? We'll find
every time they open,
wrap up.
Yep. I was just gonna say, every time you turn around, there's a different body or a different head or something else in this tomb. So, wow.
Yeah. Musical corpses.
What happened to Rest in Peace? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. Well, if one was headless, they were resting in pieces.
There you go. I bet you we're going to find something else missing here when we get back to the story.
Who knows? Here we go with part three, the exciting conclusion of The Headstrong Corpse. Stick around. We got more fun coming, too. Yeah.
Shall we turn that page of Edward Somerset's journal? Personally, I could scarcely wait to do so. But I am used to horrors. Can sort of take them in my stride. While you, on the other hand, you insist? Very well, then. We turn the page.
Margaret, for all her delicate beauty, is a strong woman, a woman of courage. But as she looked into her father's coffin, and the words...
Oh, my God!
...escaped her lips, I feared she was about to faint. But she somehow managed to retain control. When I was sure she wasn't about to collapse, I turned my attention to Mrs. Murchison and said, pull yourself together, Mrs. Murchison.
I'll try.
And answer me. What are you doing here in the crypt? And at this hour of the morning? Answer me.
I wanted to clear myself.
Clear yourself?
To prove my innocence. Now, last night, when you saw the blood smear on my arm, the way you looked at me, all of you, the way you talked, I could see you suspected me of doing these foul things. But what brought you here? What could you expect to prove here? I don't know. I only know I couldn't sleep. I tossed and turned, all sorts of thoughts going through my head, all sorts of needs to prove to you that your suspicions of me were unfounded. I came down here in desperation, I suppose, thinking I might find something, some clue, some bit of evidence that would give the lie to Hobbs. Instead, I found that.
What do you mean, give the lie to Hobbs?
Sir, I was in the kitchen all the time he claims he was looking for me. The time when poor Katie was murdered. Oh, and so that blood on my arm was from cutting the roast beef from nothing else.
So you say.
You don't believe me still.
Why should I? We find you here in the crypt under very curious circumstances, and you expect us to believe your not very convincing story?
It's the truth. I swear to you, sir, and you miss, it's true.
That's to be seen. The question now is, what's to be done?
Edward, the police must be notified as soon as possible.
Yes. Dr. Westmore was going to take a message to London tomorrow morning. Well, someone else will have to do it now.
Edward.
Yes?
Are we dealing with a madman?
I'd say what's in that coffin answers your question, Margaret. If we had found Dr. Westmore's head, just the head, I might still have some doubts, but not anymore. Not after finding Westmore's head with the lips cut off.
Terrible. Terrible what happened to Dr. Westmore.
Yes.
Will you be long in London, sir?
Only overnight. I'll return in the morning with, I hope, some member of the police force who can get to the bottom of what's going on at Moorland.
Strange. First Sir Simon's body taken, but his head left in the coffin. Then his head gone and Katie's... Oh, the poor girl. Her head put in its place. And now Dr. Westmore's head in place of Katie's and the lips cut off. Horrible. Horrible.
Very.
Have you any idea, sir, as to what's behind this?
I have my suspicions, Hobbs. But that's all they are, suspicions.
Well, now, you'll be sure to return on the morning coach, and so I'll be there to meet you.
Yes.
Depend on me. And there now, you see, the village just below us in the valley. I told you we'd be in plenty of time.
Hardly touched your dinner, miss.
I'm not hungry, Mrs. Murchison.
Oh, small wonder. All that's happened here. And some of the village farmhands telling you today that they'd not be coming back to Moorland to work the fields. I'll see who it is, miss. Lord Burley.
Is your mistress at home, Mrs. Murchison?
I'll see, my lord.
No need. I'm sure she is.
I thought I had informed you, Lord Burley, that your presence here is no longer desired.
You may change your mind about that.
If you've come to see me about...
I've come to see the crypt, if I may have your permission.
Whatever for?
I learned today that a good number of your farmhands have left you because of the doings here. Well, for my benefit, once I own moorland, I think it best to clear up the mystery of the crypt as quickly as may be.
You think you can?
I know I can. Because, you see, I know, on good authority, the reason behind what's been going on.
Is it body snatching?
Yes. So, in any case, I am informed. But I wish to see for myself before taking action. I have your permission.
Very well.
Now, come along, then. Now, first I want to look in the coffin. Ah, poor Westmore. Lips mutilated as I was informed.
Whatever it is you wish to see or do, will you do it quickly?
To be absolutely sure, I'll open the top coffin on this stack.
No, you can't do that. It's sacrilege. That's the coffin of my mother.
I'm afraid it was the coffin of your mother, my dear. In truth, I'm afraid many of these coffins no longer contain their original occupants. They are now used as storage boxes for much fresher corpses. Now, with your permission, then. Yeah, so, see for yourself, Margaret.
Please, I'd rather not.
Oh, come, come, you must. This once. I want you to know I speak the truth. Look.
But why? If bodies are in such demand, why store them away? Why not sell them at once?
Oh, my dear, you are as devoid of business sense as your father. In business, there is an inexorable law known as the law of supply and demand. When supply exceeds demand, prices fall, and vice versa. There is more demand for corpses at some times than at others, more demand for heads at certain times. At the moment, medical schools are in need of heads. Why, I haven't the vaguest idea. My informant didn't know.
I do!
What?
Hobbs! Hobbs, what are you doing here?
No need to answer that, Hobbs. That butcher knife in your hand is answer enough.
Answer enough for you! Oh. Damn your rotten throat!
Oh. Oh. Stop!
Eyes and ears everywhere. Nothing hidden from him. Oh, knew everything. Knew all about what was going on down here. I even knew, I'll be bound, that I am the body snatcher.
You
didn't know. You didn't even suspect. Mr. Somerset did. Lord Burley did. Dr. Westmore? Oh, yes, he more than suspected. He knew, because he was the one who bought what I had to sell.
Westmore!
He started me, but I ended him. I had to.
Why? Why did you have to?
He was soon to go on trial before the College of Surgeons. They have enough evidence to convict him, to break him down, and he will have told everything, including where he got the bodies, the heads, from me. Me. That's why I had to cut off his lips, so he'd never tell. Never.
You're mad.
Yes, that may be.
The bodies, the heads. How did you transport them? The nearest medical schools are in London.
I have a carriage. Well, more a wagon in the village. And the night before, I would go to London. On my days off, I would take what I had to sell into the village and stack them away in the wagon. You thought I went to London by coach, yeah? No, I never did. I always went in my wagon, yeah? Taking my produce to market to Dr. Westmore.
And I never suspected. I never knew.
Well, you do now.
No. No, don't.
Don't kill me, Hobbs. Please, don't kill me.
I must. And cut off your lips so you can't ever...
No, please!
I'll be quick. It won't hurt.
No.
Oh, yes. I've become very... Mr. Somerset. You...
Edward.
You came back.
I never went. But Hobbs will never know that now.
Oh, Edward. Oh, darling, darling. He was the body snatcher, and he... Had...
I know, dearest. I heard everything he said. But I knew the whole story before I came back from the village.
You didn't go to London.
I never intended to. The more I thought about it, the more it seemed that if Lord Burleigh could buy information, and he couldn't have got it any other way, then maybe if I spread the word in the village that I was willing to pay and pay handsomely... Well... In any case, I did. And it worked.
You learned about Hobbs.
Everything.
Thank God you arrived in time.
I thank him not only for that, but for the future that lies ahead for us. There are two important tasks I shall devote the rest of my life to. One is restoring Moorland Manor to what it once was.
And the other?
Making you the happiest woman on earth.
And so ended, happily, the strange and horrifying events at Moorland Manor. Edward Somerset continued his journal for many years, and I'm glad to be able to tell you that he did restore Moorland Manor to its former splendor. And he must have made Margaret at least one of the happiest women on earth, if 9 children mean anything. I'll be back shortly. Our story took place in 1874. There are many who say the world was a better place to live in then. Maybe it was. I don't know. All of us do face many problems, many frustrations, many fears these days. But one fear we don't have now that just about everyone had then is the fear of being buried alive. At least, I don't think we have. Our cast included Suzanne Grossman, Gordon Gould, Anne Petoniak, Ian Martin, Kurt Benson, and George Lothar. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
All right, that's E.G. Marshall saying goodnight after another terrifying tale.
Yes, and yet we could still learn so much from a wonderful story like this.
Yeah, you can. If you look in, read in between the lines, you can learn stuff. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garless moral of the story.
Apologies to Gar. As a party game, people play musical chairs. But on the Mystery Theater, coffins play musical people. There you go.
What's your problem, Marvel?
Hey, we'll have plenty of time for a wheel if you wish to call in and pick up that telephone and just give it 646-378-0264 dial. We'll be on the other end waiting for you to turn. But in the meantime here, Dale, I do have another body story that actually happened not that long ago. which you will remember almost as soon as I bring it up. This came from TMZ from July 18th, 2014. Casey Kasem has been dead for more than a month, yet he's not been buried, and now we've learned his body is missing. Fingers now point in the direction of Casey's widow, Jean. Family sources said Jean took the body from the funeral home on the day before the judge ordered her to keep it there so an autopsy could be performed. The autopsy is crucial to an ongoing criminal investigation targeting Jean. The Santa Monica PD is looking into elder abuse allegations that Jean took Casey on a wild, week-long, multi-state car ride, which caused him to develop bed sores that got infected and contributed to his death. Jean and Casey's children have been at war for years. As for where the body is, no one but Jean seems to know, and no one can find out her either. It's interesting. Jean listed Jerusalem as her address on Casey's death certificate. Casey's daughter, Carrie, believes Jean is out of the country. We reached out to Jean's people. So far, no word back. So, here we go. From the CBS News story later on, the story of Casey Kasem's location has been complex and at times a very confusing one. In May, the ailing and immobile Kasem was reported missing after he disappeared from a hospital in Santa Monica. It was later discovered his wife, despite a court order granting Carrie conservatorship over her father, had moved Casey to Washington State. During this time, the former top 40 host's health deteriorated even more rapidly. After a few weeks passed away, and the restraining order was granted to prevent Jean from cremating Casey's body until an autopsy had been performed. However, when the order was delivered to the funeral home, the body was missing. Now, after weeks of speculation, it appears that the late celebrity's final resting place is going to be Oslo. Danny Denary, a spokesman for Carrie Kasem, told THR, "We don't know what Jean's plans are. We just know that she wants to keep Casey away from his family and friends, and by the looks of it, hidden from law enforcement." Casey's son, Mike, shared similar sentiments, saying, "There is no connection with my dad has in Norway. I don't know if Jean has any ties to Oslo. She certainly has never mentioned it in the last 35 years. Check the exhumation laws there. Sounds like possibly that is the reason she will bury him there. My dad deserves to be buried where he specifically asked to be buried, Forest Lawn. Everyone keeps asking for motives as to why Jean acts how she acts. I don't have an answer." According to THR, the interview with Carrie Kasem in June, Jean had sent a letter to the lawyer in charge of Kasem's will, stating that she is coming after an irrevocable trust that the late Kasem had left for his children and has set up 30 years earlier. It had been reported that Casey Kasem had been worth $80 million at the time of his death. Now, we follow that up with the New York Daily News. Casey Kasem was finally laid to rest in Norway, and his heartbreaking photo of his final resting place highlights a radio icon's sad, strange saga over the past year. Casey passed away June at the age of 82, a heated custody dispute, and his remains. TMZ also uncovered the exact location of his grave, a desolate, unmarked site surrounded by headstones lit with candles. Casey's daughter, Carrie, took to Twitter on Monday to share her anguish that Jean buried her father halfway across the world. "This morning, my family and I learned my dad's abusive wife, Jean Thompson Kasem, and their daughter, Liberty, Kand Cemetery, a cemetery in Norway, and to bury my dad there, she wrote. And their daughter, Liberty, conned Even with all the letters attached below from my father's friends and family stating he wanted to be buried in the United States, the country in which he was born and raised, he wishes were once again ignored by his unfaithful wife. So there you have it. He is in Norway after being taken from the mortuary.
You know, I knew there was a family fight going on. I didn't follow the story that closely when he passed, but I didn't realize how ridiculous it got. My goodness. Oh, jeez.
And the thing is, his wife, who actually, I guess, had been an actress, one of the barmaids, not one that had many, if any, lines on Cheers, but they've been married for 35 years, she and Casey. He had suffered from some form of dementia at the end and wasn't able to speak. And it sounds to me like she went a little nuts herself.
Yeah, it was not a good end. But another case of real live body snatching. Dave, you're finding this good stuff. Again, if you want to spin the wheel of radio, it's, and dial carefully, please, 646-378-0264. If not, hey, we'll do it ourselves. Fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, running out of time for that. But, yeah, back to this. So this is, we're wrapping up our body snatchers with all kinds of body snatchers. Now, all the stories here pretty much had to deal with body snatching for, as you said, as did Robert Louis Stevens, for the day. And that was the big reason for it. I had heard there were other instances. I hadn't been able to find them back up yet where the bodies were taken for ransom. But I hadn't been able to back that up yet. So
well,
perhaps
course,
on another body snatching weekend. You know, you never know.
You could also call some of these six serial killers something of a body snatcher, though. You know, your Jeffrey Dahmers, your Ed Gein. Of course, they grabbed live people and made them dead, but they
right.
kept
yeah.
bodies for a while. For all kinds of weird reasons. One of them being lunch.
Yeah. I remember I did a promo for one of Josie's theatrical groups once, and it was just a handbill as a promo, and it had phony endorsements on it. And one of them was, I love several parts, and it was signed by Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
They thought it was hilarious. And they thought it was hilarious, and they said, take it out. I really didn't think I'd get that by them unless they weren't paying attention.
I don't know. On college radio, somebody submitted a song about don't take Jeffrey Dahmer to lunch. For a while, when I was in my 30s, I did radio for Berea's college station and obtained my broadcasting license, and there was some Jeffrey Dahmer song about don't invite him for lunch. It was hilarious.
That would be funny. Well, Dale, we invited people to spin the wheel and nobody called, so we'll have to do it ourselves.
Steve, why don't you climb up to the dais, give that wheel a spin, and we'll see what comes up.
I will go up and reach way up to the top here and give it a good spin.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
But now, Judy, I'd like to say a few words to the groaner in private, if I'm not too referendum.
Oh, of course, Jimmy. I'll be only too filibuster to oblige.
Thanks. Very dispensary of you.
Let's have it, Jimmy. What seems to be the trouble?
It's like this, Bing. Here I am in Hollywood, and the more than I get here, I'm a sensation, a terrific success.
Really?
Yeah, I got a room.
That's great. Then what's the beef?
It's my personal life. It's a shambles. Wherever I go, the finger of scorn is pointed at me. I can't face my friends.
How come?
I ain't got a butler.
You ain't got no butler, huh? The
no.
Shame of it. The shame of it. The utter overwhelming shame. Yes. Yes.
Give him an inch, they take eight lines. Please repeat that line, Mr. Bingo.
The overwhelming shame of it.
Yes, all I get from them fair weather friends of mine now is mockery and derision. But from you, Bing, I expect there's something warmer. Sarcasm, at least. Don't you see how it is, Bingo? I want to be a gentleman. I just got to be a gentleman.
Why?
Because that's what it says on the door of my room.
Well, now, not everyone can sleep in a tiled bedroom. But, Jimmy, the health problem, being what it is, could I get you a butler? Where could I get him?
I just saw you talking to one, that fella over there.
Oh, you mean Arthur Treacher?
Yeah.
Well, now, not everyone can sleep in a tiled bedroom. But, Jimmy, the health problem, being what it is, could I get you a butler? Where could I get him?
I just saw you talking to one, that fella over there.
Oh, you mean Arthur Treacher?
Yeah. He looks like Ned Sparks in a bad mood. But he's a great butler, I know. I've seen him butler.
Oh, Arthur Treacher isn't a butler. He's an actor. You've only seen him butler for people in pictures.
So what? If you can help Ronald Coleman on with his pants, pour tea for Norma Shear, and Simonize Don Amici's teat. I expected that to do no good. He's good enough for me.
Well, I don't know how much good it'll do, but I'll introduce you to him. Arthur, Arthur Treacher, would you step over here for a moment?
Certainly, old boy, glad to oblige.
Arthur, I'd like to have you know Jimmy Durante.
Why?
One moment, Jeeves. Don't hand me none of that drawing room lip.
Well, this... part of this. I shall join Miss Garland in the dispensary, Miss
Garland. And now, I'm a good man, let's get to the business at hand. I'm looking for a gentleman's gentleman.
Well, so far, you're two gentlemen short.
Precisely why you are here. I admit that I need a little polish.
A little polish? You could use a gallon of glow coat.
What a delightful sense of humor. No doubt you've heard the old maxim, brevity is the soul of wit.
Of course.
Well, shut up. Just answer me this. Will you or will you not be my butler?
My dear sir, this is a farce. I am not a butler. I'm a motion picture actor. A
dubious career at best. Look what pictures did to me, typed me. Every picture I was in, they made me play a fellow with a big nose. Why?
It's quite obvious. And get it off my chin.
Pardon me, I was carried away. But butlin' is the only job for you, teacher.
Treacher is the name, Treacher.
Pardon me.
My dear sir, even if I were to give up the cinema and become a butler, I most assuredly would never enter the service of a creature of your ilk.
And what, pray, is wrong with my ilk?
You, sir, are boorish, crass, overwhelmingly illiterate, and completely repugnant.
How much of that is good?
None of it. It was purely a commentary on your lack of breeding. And if you tell me you breathe fine through that great beak of yours, I shall scream.
Teacher?
Treacher is the name, sir. Treacher.
To err is but human. Go and get your salary. You're fired. What's more, you get no reference from me. Goodbye.
I can think of no more desirable culmination to this repulsive association.
Well, now that you've apologized, I'll keep you on. Look, Peach. I'm in a spot. You gotta help me out. I appeal to your baser instincts.
Well, Mr. Durante, I suppose one should lend a hand to one's fellow human, though I use the word loosely.
Spoken like an Englishman and an alley. Thank you. I'm just the tool of an educated brain.
Quite, quite. Now, as regards the duties of your butler, I presume you'll want him to serve tea each afternoon?
Never touch the stuff.
You never drink tea?
Nope. Them little bags get stuck in my throat.
Oh, quite so, my dear. Tell me about your tub.
My tub?
Yes. You tub daily, of course.
Repeat that line.
Getting rather tiresome. You tub daily, of course.
If the water's warm, I tub. If it's not, I basin.
It's no use, Mr. Durante. I don't know where I could find a man you'd be happy with, and distinctly vice versa.
Happiness ain't everything, Mr. Teacher.
Treacher is the name, sir.
Money is what makes the world go round, and I'm prepared to pay a buttload a huge sum of $18 a week.
$18 a week? Why, I paid my man $100 a week right up till the day he left me.
You say he left?
Yes.
And the job pays $100 a week?
That's right.
Brother, you've got a new butler.
And, of course, Jimmy Durante and Arthur Treacher and a caller. Welcome, caller, to Erie House Radio.
Well, hello there. This is Jiggles the Clown.
Hi, Jiggles. How are they hanging?
What's so funny?
Well, I'm waiting for the pie.
Oh, you're waiting for a pie. Here's a pie. I'm a clown.
Glad you could make it here tonight. I don't know how much of our stories you heard or if you caught any of the Wheel of Radio, but we're doing our thing here, playing the old-time shows.
I see. It's a very good thing you're doing here. I'm very much entertained, and I am an entertainer myself, so, oh, I know. Something like that.
Jiggles, you sound like an entertainer yourself.
Yes, of course. I go to all sorts of birthday parties, you know. And I do little tricks for the kiddies.
Yeah, what kind of tricks are those?
About some of my tricks?
Yeah, if it's safe to say, yeah, sure.
Well, of course, of course. Well, it's a magic trick. It involves handcuffs. I put the handcuffs on the little kiddo, and I tell them the trick is you don't have the key.
Well, I can give you some parents' numbers that would love that trick.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Matter of fact, I can give you some single. I can give you some single girls that would like that trick too.
Oh, yes. Single girls? Do you know any thick clown girls?
I don't. I don't.
My ex-wife was a bit of a clown.
Oh my!
Not the funny kind.
They don't seem to travel the same circles I do.
Oh, it's so hard to find someone to talk to here. I called into this conservative radio show earlier that was interviewing a congressional candidate, and they hung up on me. You don't hang up on Jiggle the Clown.
Well, there's a reason for that. You were going against a professional clown. That's why.
I just wanted to ask what he was going to do for clown rights. You know it's illegal in 30 states for clowns to get married?
I don't know, but aren't you relatively safe from, like, cannibals? I've heard cannibals don't like to eat clowns. They taste funny.
Oh, good one, my friend. Yes, I am very much safe.
So,
you know, children, they have an interesting taste. No, I'm not that clown.
I have a question. How many clowns can you guys actually fit into that car?
How many clowns? I'd say around 30.
Wow. That'd be a heck of a carpool.
Yeah, usually during the carpool, we're all bunched together. So, you know, tension starts to fly high, sparks fly, and eventually some not-safe-for-work things start happening.
I know how you can get 70 horror hosts into a car. Blender.
Blender. So do you have a show of your own, Jiggles? Do you have a show of your own, or?
Oh, I wish Jiggles had a show. Unfortunately, Jiggles does not have a show. I mean, this voice is pretty grating on the throat, so I don't know how that would go.
Well, Jiggles is always welcome to call here.
Oh, good, good. I'll be keeping that in mind. But Jiggles has to go now, so I must bid you gentlemen adieu, but I've had a stupendous time.
Well, thank you for calling, Jiggles.
Of course, of course. Thank you very much, and have a nice
clowntastic
day.
What a great guy. That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm telling you. What a surprise. You really knew he was calling, didn't you? Yeah, you did. Just leave this on.
I don't know who the hell it was. I have an idea, but I don't know for sure who the hell that was.
Yeah, there are some people who can do that kind of a voice, but Jiggles, he was pretty good at that, keeping there. I did want to mention quickly, as we are quickly coming upon that ending hour there on the clock, Arthur Treacher spent a year or two doing the Jimmy Durante Show on radio, although this was not from that. This was, although the routine may have been, this was from an episode of Mail Call. So it's always great to hear Jimmy Durante murder the English language.
Yes, it is. He's awesome. And, you know, life does have its ups and downs, doesn't it, Dave?
It does. And we're going to exploit that next week, aren't we?
Yes, we are, with elevators. Yes, there is a suspenseful, terrifying aspect to elevators, besides claustrophobia, I would imagine. And We will bring some shows for you next Friday. It's Theater 5 with the Elevator Nightbeat. Oh, good. Nightbeat is back with the Elevator Caper and another suspense with the After Dinner Story. And, of course, next Saturday, another CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yep. A legal episode called tomorrow. No, never come. Yes. What a great title. You have to listen to it just because of the title is so great, you know?
Yeah, that's all coming to you next weekend, and we'll keep the good stuff coming. We've got lighthouses, wind, hounds, skulls, all kinds of fun things coming up, and that's just leading you up to Halloween season when you know we're going to go nuts. So thanks, everyone, for calling in. Fogs, GG, or, you know, chatting with us. Fogs, GGISI Paper, and Mrs. Thank you very, very much for listening to Eerie House Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Actually, I was a little concerned. I would have brought this up earlier, except that we got that tremendous caller there. I was a little worried about GG's side paper, because they told us how their neighbors are all dead because they go up against a cemetery, property against a cemetery. Mm-hmm. And then they said, dang, unexpected guests. What? So...
That's horrible and wonderful at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Interesting story and interesting guest who just must have just found our... I'm sorry, but he couldn't have competed with a professional clown running for office. So, you know, he's better than he called our show.
No, but I'll tell you what, that guy's got a little bit of shtick there. He needs to... he needs to do more. I'd like to hear more of his routine. Great character there.
He does. I would look forward to seeing some things from him. So if he calls in, we'll just have to audition him for something.
Yeah.
Discovering all this great talent. Jiggles the Clown. The only jiggles I knew up to this point was the handle on the toilet tank. So, you know, it's a little bit different there.
Dave and I were commenting before the show started that it was very, very nice yesterday. Not that it wasn't nice today. It was very nice with our regular listeners who feel diseased because they feel compelled to be here each and every weekend. But so many others stopped in that are, you know, semi-regular friends, but it was nice to have a little crowd there last night.
It was a nice night out, too, so it made me kind of wonder, wow, that's...
Yeah.
Do they have no... But now they make their lives a part of our show, and that's great to see, because that's one of the reasons we're doing it right here, to share all these programs. And sometimes it looks like we don't have anybody there when we know they are. And then there's sometimes where we have a full, you know, a nice sized room like what we had last night. And that always makes it a lot of fun to see the conversation going on between everybody during the shows.
And what kills me is where some of these folks are from. Sure, the vast majority of our listeners are from the United States, but it is less than 95%, about a half a percent each for Australia and France. Why France? I give up. United Kingdom, 1%. Canada, 1.75% of our listeners are from Canada. Good old Canada.
Well, that's just the exchange rate. That's the dollar exchange rate. So that's what they had to have that many.
Yeah, so that to me was a real nice thing, is to get some of these international callers. And I know Celine will be dropping in from Scotland sometime. He's not in Scotland right now, but he's touring Europe. Friend of mine, Celine, from way back on the Monster Channel days when they had a live stream channel.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, reconnected with him lately. He'll be dropping by soon.
That's great.
And it just amazes me that we get people from all over the world. But that's the internet for you.
That is the intranet, absolutely. It is a great resource. It's a good sense of entertainment. It can be used in bad ways as well. Unfortunately, but for what we have here, I think it's anything that's made for good can be made turned into bad. So I like to focus on the good and the fun things,
you just take it from there and try to be the best you can and do what you can. That's what you really need to do.
That's pretty much the way of it. And we're going to continue because I think it's important, really, to preserve old films, old radio shows, things that preceded us, and try to, you know, take a look through the prism of another time at fantasy stories, at horror stories, science fiction stories, and learn too how these productions were made, and it teaches you the basics of how to produce stuff now, because Dave and I like making our own productions as well. And, you know, if we can inspire one person, just one person, to get out there and do something creative or share these types of shows with other folks, I think that's great.
Absolutely. Because radio does need its next, or internet needs its next era of audio dramas. And there are a lot of groups out there. It's hard for them to keep going because really you do it for the love of it. There's no money in doing it. And you're always, same with hosting movies, there's always more that goes out than comes in with that kind of a thing. But you do it because you enjoy doing it and you enjoy sharing them. And you want to see the art form continue. You know, it's that was an interesting concept when we talked about that in that that talk that we had with all the in the conference there at the Monster Fest Mania that you headed up, Dale. It was just very, very interesting. Here we were, all these I wouldn't call us old because I don't like calling myself old, but we're older. And we're always wondering where the next generation is going to pick something like this up. We grew up with it. They didn't. And so we do this so they'll see it. So hopefully someone will pick up and continue to do what we are doing as well.
Yep. And if not, we'll just keep going as long as we can. Because there's a whole lot of radio coming your way.
A whole lot of radio. Yep. And every so often, a new story. I think we've got a new one next week with from 39, the Jane Harden mystery. And I don't believe we've played one of hers before.
I don't recall ever. I honestly am not familiar with her, so we're going to learn together next weekend. That'll be on Saturday alongside of another CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Nice. So it's almost like somebody scheduled this stuff way out ahead of time.
Yeah, so I think it's all an accident. Fate, kismet, that kind of a thing. But anyway.
In a way it is, Dave. In a way it is. I took a twisting, swirling, sometimes chaotic path getting here. But... It's going to perpetuate because there's way too much radio to play.
There is. And that is the one thing about all these old programs being a public domain is that unlike the movies, there's a very limited amount of those. Where here, there is an endless amount, it seems, of radio dramas that we can share with everybody.
Yes. And that we shall do next weekend, Friday at 8:30 Eastern and Saturday at 6:30 Eastern. Every weekend for
and
a live show.
And with that, I guess it's time to call in Jimmy Durant. He must be tired from his first performance, but we can bring him in one more time to tell everybody good night.
He's not. I am. Good night, Jimmy.
Good night, good night, good night. It's time to say good night, good night, good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.